How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We are here every day, Monday through Friday, noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern. We got a lot to get into here today in the second segment of the show, about 25 minutes after the top of the hour. Brandi Rhodes is joining us here today. Tons to talk about, the Nightmare Collective, AEW, the NAPTI Convention. So much to get into with Brandi Rhodes. She will be our guest today in the second segment of the show. Prior to that, we got a ton of news we got to get into. Everything from the announcement of the location of next year's WrestleMania to The Rock. The 18-year-old daughter of The Rock, Simone Johnson, is now a part of WWE. And keep in mind, WWE rarely signs people under the age of 21. 18 years old, she's in. We'll tell you about that. As well as matches announced for Dynamite, matches announced for the New Japan 48th anniversary show, and so much more. No phone calls today. We're not going to have time. If you'd like to send us text messages, you're welcome to do so. Phone number 425-780-7566. That is the text message line. 425-780-7566. Brian at WrestlingObserver.com. You can email me there. You can also tweet me at Brian Alvarez on Twitter. And since yesterday, we've had a lot of people asking about how to listen to this show live, since I've been talking about it, and some people have figured out for the first time you can, in fact, listen to this show live at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern every day. Go to WrestlingObserver.com, scroll down the right-hand side of the page. There is a link there for TuneIn Radio. It says, and I quote, Wrestling Observer Live, weekdays 3 Eastern, Sundays 6 Eastern, stream Sports Byline USA. Click that, and you can listen to this show live every single day if you happen to be around during that time. And if not, you can always listen to us on replay at WrestlingObserver.com. So all of the news when we come back from the break, then we will be joined by Brandi Rhodes. Lots to get into. Mike Sempervivi joins us after the break as well. Stick around, Wrestling Observer Live. Back on the show, Brian Alvarez here, Wrestling Observer Live. Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Brandi Rhodes down in the next segment, so we got a lot to get into here today. Very quickly, a plug. This coming Sunday, I will be doing a book signing, the Kino Kuniya Bookstore, Portland downtown store, 829 Southwest 9th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97205. If you missed any of that, you can check out my Twitter at Brian Alvarez. It's going to be all over there for the next several days. I will have Death of WCW. I will have 100 things WWE fans should know and do before they die. If you already bought them, just show up and I'll sign them. You don't have to buy anything. So check it out. Big bookstore, Chinese, Japanese, and English books. They're going to be getting copies of Tanahashi's autobiography, Nakamura's autobiography. So there's going to be some other wrestling books there as well. Check it out this Sunday. Kino Kuniya Bookstore, 1 o'clock. I'll be there 1 to 3, so you can come to the book signing and then go straight to NXT. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Check that out on Sunday. For the first time since 2005, WWE heading back to Los Angeles for WrestleMania. Announcement made Monday on Twitter. The 37th edition of the year's biggest wrestling show will be at the SoFi Stadium, Sunday, March 28, 2021. They also announced SmackDown, TakeOver, and Raw, all held at the Staples Center. Access in the WWE Hall of Fame will be at the LA Convention Center. The SoFi Stadium, the brand new $5 billion facility, will be the home to the LA Rams, the Chargers of the NFL. Will not officially open yet. They already have a Super Bowl, NCAA College Football Championship game, and Olympic events already booked. The third time WrestleMania will emanate from the city of Los Angeles. So there you go. Next year in LA. Make your plans now, everybody. I'll be in LA for something. I don't know if I'll stay for Mania. Still haven't
decided. You're
going
to go to LA? You're going to brave that? As much as you hate to travel, you're going to go to LA, a place where traveling is difficult?
The issue is whether I stay for WrestleMania. I'm not sure I'm staying for WrestleMania this year. I think I may just go for the Q&A and some random shows, and then come home and watch it here.
A little bit of shopping. On Rodeo Drive, hang out with Bobby Heenan's old residence there in Beverly Hills.
Sure. Yeah. ESPN reported XFL debut, the Seattle Dragons.
Boo.
Versus the DC Defenders.
Woohoo!
3.3 million viewers on ABC Saturday, peaking at 4 million for the closing quarter of the game. Expectation was 4 million viewers. They were a little bit under that. The relaunched league debuted Saturday. Early afternoon game on ESPN or ABC. Late afternoon game on Fox. The strongest market was Seattle-Tacoma. 6.4 rating. Followed by Columbus, Ohio, Cleveland, Ohio. The debut week of the AAF in 2019 averaged 2.9 million viewers for that debut on CBS. Game aired in prime time, however, so not a fair comparison. The original XFL averaged a 9.5 rating. They didn't list the viewership here on the front page, but the viewership was 14 million for the XFL debut. Fell 52% in week two, similar drop in week three, and the next thing you know, they were canceled. That is not likely to happen here. Listen, it's under what they were expecting, but everybody that I know that watched it thought that it was fun and it was good. And this includes Vinny, who watched the original XFL. He said this was much better. Oh. And honest to God, if the show does 3.3 million this week, and 3 million next week, or 2.8, or anywhere around there, everything is going to be fine. If next week they're under a million, which I think is pretty much impossible, yes, that would be a disaster. If they were down 52%, I think that would be a disaster. But I don't think that's going to happen. So we'll see. Good reviews for the first day of the XFL, the new XFL.
Yeah, much better presentation, a faster football game, American football game, that is. And no fake doubts on what it is, no secrets about it. It is guys trying to get to the CFL and the NFL. And that's what they're touting it as. There's no competition with the NFL, none of that sort of stuff. It's just, it is what it is. And they want games to be faster. Again, there's a lot of parallels of to look at between the XFL and how Vince McMahon is planning that and how he runs his wrestling organization that is kind of laughable.
Samoan Johnson officially beginning a career in pro wrestling. WWE announced today, Johnson, the 18-year-old daughter of Dwayne The Rock Johnson, and Danny Garcia has begun training at the company's Performance Center in Orlando. WWE wrote, she is on the path to becoming the first fourth-generation wrestler in their history, joining The Rock, Rocky Johnson, and Peter Maivia. Means the world to me, she told WWE.com, to know my family has such a personal connection to wrestling is really special to me. I feel grateful to have the opportunity not only to wrestle, but to carry on that legacy. Triple H had all sorts of nice things to say about her. And The Rock, in 2018, to Good Morning America, said, I told her, honey, whatever your passion is, I support that. Wrestling was good to me. I started my career in MSG, so bring it on. She's going to be a champion. It's a pretty good prediction by The Rock right there. She had already done some training prior to officially joining WWE. Matt Bloom, NXT head coach, A-Train, says Simone has a lot to learn. She's hungry to learn. Picks her coaches' minds and the veteran superstars. It's been a short time, but she has been crushing it. So we'll see how she does. I mean, The Rock, I mean, the best you can say about The Rock was, not even the best, but he was a natural. I mean, from day one. From day one, when people saw The Rock, it was like, this guy's going to be the guy. And this is his daughter, and my guess is that she's going to end up doing very well. So we'll see. But she's 18, and hey, they, like I said in the opening segment, rarely do they sign people under the age of 21. In fact, for a long time, they wouldn't. But they've made exceptions here and there, and this is one of them.
I was going to say, and they won't. They won't do it much often, much more than this, but they have a special case here. And you might as well, you know who her father is, and you know how he runs his career and how he runs his life. And hey, you know, there's a lot of competition out there now for a lot of different things, including pro wrestling. And you might as well take advantage of this now. It's a special case. And I mean, it's The Rock's daughter, for heaven's sakes. You know, why wouldn't you take this chance?
All right, a couple of other notes, and we got to head to break, and we'll get Brandy here on the air. The main event, New Japan's 48th anniversary show, Naito versus Hiromu Takahashi, IWGP champion versus IWGP junior heavyweight champion. They've done these matches many times, around this time of year, actually. Hiromu asked for the match to be an IWGP heavyweight title match. This has not been confirmed, not listed as such, on New Japan's website. Fact of the matter is, Naito's probably winning, so who cares? May as well make it a title match. Both men coming off big matches on Saturday. And by the way, I've now seen both matches and throw me into the camp that love the Moxley-Suzuki match more than the Ryo-Lee-Hiromu Takahashi match. But they were both spectacular matches in completely different ways. Theme in recent years for the anniversary show is heavyweight champion versus junior heavyweight champion. Last year, Jay White defeated Will Ospreay. It's March 3rd at Ota War Gym. And also, they've announced for Dynamite this week, Sammy Guevara versus Dustin Rhodes. They faced off last month on the first Dynamite of the year. Guevara defeated Rhodes after Jake Hager interfered, kneeing Rhodes in the groin. Could somebody interfere this week?
Oh, no.
I guess we'll find out. John Moxley facing Santana in an eye for an eye match. After Moxley attacked Santana's eye last week. Riho versus Nyla Rose. And that's this coming week. Then, of course, they've announced February 19th, Tag Team Battle Royal to determine the next Tag Team title challengers. Cody versus Wardlow. And the week after that, it's Kenny Omega versus Pac in a 30-minute Iron Man match.
You better not let Wardlow let you hear him pronounce his name like that.
Have you ever heard him pronounce his name? Maybe that's how he pronounces it.
It's not how it is.
You don't know that.
You're doing this with
MJ. I had a gym teacher, Mr. Wardlow.
Mm-hmm.
Back in a moment with Brandy Rhodes, Observer Live. Back in the show, Brian Alvarez here, Wrestling Observer Live. Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Very happy to be joined today for two segments by Brandy Rhodes. Chief Brandy Officer, how are you doing today?
I'm good. Listen, I've got something super weird going on. I had you guys plugged into my phone, like my car phone, and it's playing something else. So I'm with the hope of not losing you guys, I'm going to unplug myself. So please let me know if you lose me.
All right. We're going to stick around here.
I wonder if that sounds better than us.
Yeah. Maybe.
All right. Am I still here?
Hey, you're here.
Perfect.
Oh, man. What on earth was that? That was crazy.
That was this show on a regular day. Something weird's going on. Something weird. Well, speaking of weird, we're going to talk about the Nightmare Collective here. But before that, I want to talk to you about something from about 2 weeks ago, maybe. Your appearance, your keynote at NAPTI. So 8 years ago, you were there as a model. You were there, I guess, to show people where to sit and where to go. And I guess you had vowed at the time that someday you would be an attendee. And here you are 8 years later, you're given a keynote address. Tell us about this.
Well, man, I mean, it was a really surreal experience for me because, yeah, like I said, I used to work it up as a model and I used to live in the Miami area. And multiple times I would go to the Fountain Blue Hotel. It's kind of one of the marquee hotels there, especially after they redid it. But a lot of times, big events like this or conferences would happen at that hotel. And, you know, a lot of times if we weren't working on the print side, we'd love a gig where, you know, we'd get to hang out and meet cool, you know, executives and people coming in, you know, from all over the world for these conferences and just kind of watch them work. And at that point in time, I remember I've always been a dreamer, or, you know, Cody will always say that. But I'm one of those people that if I get a little bit of something, you got to know I'm not going to be happy there. I'm going to keep going and I'm going to want more and I'm going to want more. I'm going to want to get better and I'm going to want to do better. I don't know where that ends. I hope one day we stop before I'm, you know, 100 years old and still not having reached all these goals that I keep rebuilding for myself. But yeah, NAPTI was a huge goal realized in that. I do remember back then, you know, saying to myself and saying to friends, like, one day I'm going to be at something like this, but I'm going to be a guest. I'm not going to be a model. I'm going to be a guest. I would love to be invited, you know, as some cool executive to be at a show like this. But then it's even a step further to be asked to do the keynote. and the first ever keynote for AEW, which is a huge honor. It'll never happen again. That's one of the greatest things about this company is there's a lot of firsts. And, you know, I'm really in the moment with these firsts. I don't want to forget them. I always tell myself to, you know, pay extra attention when these things are happening because it's only going to happen once. And, you know, the second time and the third and the fourth, it's not going to be the same. The first is always the first. So I'm happy to have that.
Now, you've done, I mean, certainly not to this degree, but I mean, you've done a lot of public speaking and been in this role before. But when you heard that you were going to get the opportunity to do this, I mean, were you super nervous about it? Were you excited about it? Were you, I mean, what was going through your mind and how did you prepare?
So I'm a really weird person in that the things that most people, if you tell them, hey, you're going to have to do this, that makes them like terribly nervous. Those things aren't the things that make me terribly nervous. It's other things that are really weird. Like, for instance, singing in church when I was a little kid in front of like eight people would make me so nervous. I would feel like I was going to throw up, yet and still I could ring announce in front of tens of thousands of people, no problem. So I really don't know. That just made me so excited. I had zero nerves about it. I couldn't wait to get to the day to make that happen and make it a reality. And when I got on the stage and you know, you start talking to a new group of people, you know, I'm used to talking to people about entertainment and wrestling. And this was my first time speaking to a bunch of TV executives who probably have never listened to anybody talk about wrestling. So, you know, you kind of have to read the room a little bit. And when I hit him with my first little joke and there was a collective chortle, I was excited. So, and then we were just off to the races and rolling and having a good time. I really hope that AEW gets invited to come back again. And I hope that I get to be a part of it, in some aspect, even if it's not speaking.
You know, it's funny because I feel the exact same way as you. If I have to do something in front of like four people, like you may as well kill me. If there's a large crowd, like one of our Q&As, that's totally fine. And I don't know if it's because, like, in a large crowd, you sort of can't see everybody. It's just like a sea of humanity. Whereas with four people, you got to look at everybody, and they're looking at you. I don't know what it is, but I understand that.
That's what they say it is. I don't believe that. I just think some of us are weird like that. I think you and me, Brian, were weird.
So if you had to give, right? If there was like a meeting and it was you and like the head of TNT and an assistant, so it's three of you in a room, that's far worse than having to get up and speak at an NAPTI convention.
Oh no, because I actually like all the people at TNT a lot, and I've had a lot of like personal meetings and interactions with them, so I feel really comfortable with them.
Sure, but I mean, another two people you don't know.
Right. If it was somebody else that you know, I'm really trying to pitch something to that could be very, very beneficial to AEW, and it's just me and them, you know, I probably have a little bit more apprehension going into it. But at the end of the day, I feel like if they get my jokes, we're good. If somebody were to not get one of my little opening, you know, jokes, then I might be sweating.
Now, do you have to read the room beforehand on these jokes, or do you have some set material you go in with? How do you know what joke to hit them with?
You know, most of the time, my material is real, and it comes from whatever just happened. So, for instance, at NAPTI, I was backstage, and I had the mic on, and I kept talking into it on accident because it was live, and I didn't know it. So then when I got up on the stage, I said, you know, hey, thanks, everybody. Also, you know, disregard everything that I've been saying, because no matter how many times they told me this mic was live, I still kept talking. So I'm sure, you know, you guys all know about, you know, the fact that, you know, I'm thirsty and I, whatever. And they just giggled. So it was, you know, I like to make fun of myself a lot. I'm one of those, maybe I'm self-loathing. I don't know.
So when you were a child, what did you want to be when you grew up? I mean, clearly you probably did not imagine that you would be an executive in a professional wrestling company.
Definitely not. That was not something that, you know, was on four-year-old Brandy's mind. There were two things on four-year-old Brandy's mind. I had a first plan, and then I had a backup plan. So I had the A and the B plan. The A plan was to be an Olympic figure skater. which then I didn't know what I was doing after that. I was, like, at 4 years old, you still believe that, you know, being an Olympic figure skater meant that you were a billionaire, which is not the case. But that was the first plan. And then the second plan was always to be a TV news anchor. Even from, like, a small child, I thought that that was the job.
A TV news anchor.
Yep, which I did for a little bit and realized it wasn't all I thought it was going to be. Also, you're not a billionaire being a TV news anchor in Flint,
Michigan. Dude, you're not a billionaire doing a lot of things you want to be when you grow up. So I guess, you know, because you are in front of the television now and you're talking to people, you're not a news anchor, but I mean, you're a television personality. I mean, what did you expect, besides the money, in a TV news anchor job? And what did you learn where you were like, this is not what I expected? What was different?
Well, I always thought, because, you know, a weird thing for me growing up that I just turned out to accept later in life was every time, even as a little kid, when I would talk to people, when I would speak, they would say, gosh, you're so well-spoken. And, like, you have such a important sounding voice, and you sound like a news personality, or you sound like a TV personality. And that started happening when I was literally a kid. So, like, I just started to think, well, if that's what I sound like, maybe that's my natural calling, is to deliver the news to people, to tell them the news, which was always a really cool thing in learning, you know, to do news and studying news, is that the voice that I have is my real voice. It's not a put-on voice at all. I think a lot of people think that I put on an announcer voice, or I try to create the voice. I've had this voice since I was a very little kid.
Sounds like Mara Rinaldo.
All I've done is just... yeah, like, all I've done is just own it and accept it. So when I was, you know, in classes and stuff with people who were learning, who were more soft-spoken, they would try to put on a voice, and it was just so cute and funny to me, because I was just like, yeah, no, they would say, like, what do you do? What do you try to do? And I'm like, I just talk. I don't know. I just have that voice, I guess.
So you did some TV anchor person work, and you didn't like it. What was not what you expected?
I feel like a little bit of it was my fault, because, you know, having people tell me all the time growing up, oh, you'd be perfect for this, this is for you, I just kind of took for granted that it was going to be for me. And when I got into it, you know, as far as the anchoring, the actual anchoring work, I definitely did enjoy a lot more than the infield reporting. But you don't just become an anchor. You start out in the field, and you have to do a lot of field work, especially in markets that are smaller, like Flint, Michigan. You also have to drive yourself to the story. You have to set up the camera. You have to get the audio and everything going, and it's a lot of work.
It's not as glamorous as you'd think.
Oh no.
Right, and it's stuff that I'm not really particularly great at. So a lot of times, you know.
Well, actually, hold that thought. We're gonna head to a break right here. Sorry about that. Back in just a moment with more Wrestling Observer Live. Back in the show, Brian Alvarez here, Wrestling Observer Live. Mike Sempervivi, also WrestlingObserver.com. Mike's got one more quick question, then it's AEW time. So, Mike, go for it.
Randy, what was it like, since you're from west of Detroit, what was it like growing up there in the Mitten in Michigan? And what was it like, were you ever a pro wrestling fan at all? Because I know the Monday Night Wars era, as you were going through high school and into college, they were still kind of raging at the time. Were you ever interested in all at this stuff, even in the slightest, as a fan?
Oh, yeah. I mean, as a kid, my brother and I used to watch wrestling together all the time. It actually got banned in our household because my brother pitched such a fit after one of the pay-per-views. My parents
probably WCW
decided, like, this. They were just like, "This is too much. You can't handle it. So you guys got to stop watching." So I stopped watching then, and then I wasn't reintroduced to wrestling again until I was in college at University of Michigan, and I was in a women's studies class. And wrestling was actually depicted, because at the time, there was a lot going on in the Attitude Era that wasn't the most favorable looking to women. So it was actually heavily discussed and picked apart some of those segments. So those were my my intros into wrestling, until I actually got into wrestling.
Well, now that you're into wrestling, the big question the last couple of days is, what's the story with the Nightmare Collective?
Yeah, it's a question I feel like that's been going on for a while enough that I want to address it. I want to address it one time, and then I'm not going to talk about it probably ever again. I mean, we'll see.
Ever again?
Probably not. So here's the thing. You know, obviously I released some videos and, you know, did this kind of deep dive series on my own Twitter that then I was able to share, you know, with AEW's YouTube and some of the shows that we do off from Dynamite. But the Nightmare Collective became the Nightmare Collective. There was no original, hey, let's do a Nightmare Collective where we have all of these people and they're doing all of these things. And there was never that. The original thing was supposed to be myself and Awesome Kong, me managing Awesome Kong. Awesome Kong came to me with an idea of wanting to change her look and kind of her vibe, but still being, you know, an assassin of sorts, a really big competitor, a huge threat to the women's division. And, you know, she had this idea about wanting to cut hair as trophy, you know, to keep, which is a little bit more understandable in that context. And, you know, Awesome Kong's not a talker. So naturally a good fit was for me to, when she needed somebody to talk, to be the one to talk. Unfortunately, you can lay out, you know, a huge trajectory of things that you want to do. And sometimes things just happen that don't allow that to happen. And one of the things was I noticed that Awesome Kong was not physically feeling great. And she's my friend, so there I would never want to ask somebody to work in a capacity where I know they're going to hurt themselves. So what then happened was, you know, more of a greater group discussion of, okay, well, what do we do here? And the Nightmare Collective came to be. And there were, you know, some really great ideas coming from various different directions from various people that I respect very much in the company, wanting to help and see this flourish because it had some really great tools. But the problem, and one of the things that we claim at AEW is that, you know, we let our artists play their music the way that they want to play it. I'm one of the artists that's part of the Nightmare Collective, and I started to see that the music was not playing how I liked it. Like I didn't feel it. And I started to notice that audience members were on the same page as me. I was starting to feel like, hey, I'm not really understanding this, or some things are happening that are happening too quickly for people to really keep up with this, or, you know, this is a nice idea, but we don't have the time to explain it how people want to explain it. So I think a big misconception is AEW made changes. Not at all. I did 100%, because if I'm going to do something, I want to be happy with it. And I was not happy with it. I wasn't happy with me in it. I wasn't happy with other people, you know, as far as how they were being perceived and portrayed. So I made the decision to do the series that I put out with the therapist. I hired the actress that was the therapist. And some people on the inside know that's somebody that's close to me. And put that whole thing together just kind of out on a limb just to see, you know, hey, will people, you know, want to watch this or want to see, you know, what the backstory was here. And people loved it. It was really cool. So that was so much fun. And we kept going with that. And that was literally just me. I mean, like I said, hey, I want to take this on a sidetrack. I don't want to take up TV time for this. I want to, you know, do it on my own and just kind of let this live for the people who are enjoying this, and had free reign to do that. And it was really fun. But obviously, as we saw last week in a very serious show and very serious moment, we saw what people perceive as normal Brandy back, and kind of just made more sense to let it lie in that aspect where it was. So the most recent video, you know, where you see me burning my clothes, that gives us some closure there. But what it doesn't do is it doesn't tell us anything about Mel or Luther, who are very much here, you know. So that's something interesting for people to look at as, you know, hey, what happens next there? That definitely doesn't mean, you know, it's dead just because I'm not there. It just means that I personally didn't see myself as an asset to that situation. I wanted to do something fun and creative to kind of give some storytelling to that, that I think was really necessary. And I'm good with it now. And I feel, I hope fans are good with it now. And I hope whatever goes on forward from that, they know that this is something that is an open creative thing. This is not something, you know, a lot of times I see people say, well, oh, we did all of this, you know, because Brandy wanted to. Well, I'm telling you the absolute opposite in that, like, people were encouraging me to continue on, and I didn't feel it. So I didn't want to. And, you know, it's good to get stuff from fans and hear from fans, like, hey, I like this, hey, I don't like this. But most important, again, is, you know, our competitors and our talent and how they feel when things are feeling really good. You know that, you know, it's going to come across that way. When too many cooks get in the pot on something, you're going to see that too. And I think a lot of fans started to see that, you know, in the end, where there were some people who were really passionate about this and trying to, you know, keep it going. Like, you know, one time that I was on a commentary, that part wasn't for me. And so there were other people who worked together to create that moment. I think that was the Chris Statlander Riho championship match. Yep. That was not me. that was creative ideas coming from another direction that they wanted to try. So I think that, you know, a lot of times it's easy when my name is attached to something, when it's not what you want, to call it mine or make it mine. And that, you know, there's always going to be people who do that. But, you know, I think a lot of people know it's not. That's not true.
So this ties into the Cody strapping on Wednesday. So this had been promoted for a long time, and probably 3-4 weeks before they finally did it on television. And when he, I assume at some point he must have approached you and just said, I got this idea, I'm going to take 10 lashes from this belt. I mean, when you first heard about this idea, I mean, when he formulated it, did he have in his mind already, like, okay, here's who's going to come out for each of these 10 lashes here? Or did he just have the idea of, all right, I'm going to do this 10 lashes segment, and I'm going to think about it, and when the day comes, I'm going to figure out what he was going to do? Like, the point I'm making, or the reason I'm bringing this up, is because you coming out there at the end, I swear to God, this is not just because you're on the show. You can go back and listen to past shows. I had people texting me and emailing me, and they said when Brandy ran out, I cried. They told me that they cried over a pro wrestling angle when you ran down there. So that was one of the keys to the emotion of that whole deal. And if you look at the timing where you did all of the angles and burned the clothes and the therapist and everything like that, it was actually perfect timing the way that it worked out. But I would presume that from the idea of a strapping to when it actually occurred, like, that wasn't part of the plan, or was it?
You know, Cody is another level of genius. As far as, you know, things that I mean, there are things that he can do that no one else can do, not unlike his father. You know, there are some just moments that only Dusty could have been the catalyst for. And you know, it's funny, I think a lot of people think that in our house there's a lot more talk about AEW on a show standpoint than there is. I mean, just the other day, my husband got so mad at me for saying the name of one of our PR executives so many times, because that is so much what's on my brain when I talk to him, because I want answers for all of these other things. So in that sense, a lot of times I don't know what he's thinking. I don't know what he's doing. Moments that he and I have like that are very real. I'm not somebody who can cry on command or anything like that. So whenever I'm crying, in a sense, I'm also like a really, really hard person. Like, I don't cry a lot in normal life. Like, I can count on my hand, you know, how many times I remember crying. So like, it's very emotional and real when I am crying. And, you know, that segment, it hurt me, because it hurts me to see my husband go through something like that. I've never been hit with a belt like that. And, you know, I don't know what it feels like, but I can hear the noise. The one that I wasn't even looking when, the ninth lash hit him in the back, but I heard it. And I remember
Wardlow
when I heard it.
Oh my God, you could have heard that on the moon.
Yes, and it just started tears in my eyes because I knew that this had to be the most terrible thing to endure. And then, you know, I came down to him at the ring and the things that I said I meant, if I could have taken the last one, I would have taken it, and then I would have jumped up and scratched that man's eyes out, because sure, it would have hurt so bad that I would have just reacted and absolutely attacked somebody. But you know, moments like that are, you can't recreate, because they're real. He and I have a real natural emotional bond with each other. We've been through so much together in the past 8 years here, and everything's just very real and very emotional.
So you've also mentioned that you're more comfortable, I think you said something like you're less comfortable in the ring and more as like a manager and a mouthpiece. And, you know, because of the situation with Kong, I mean, you ended up in the ring one week when you weren't supposed to be in the ring. I mean, did any of that play into this, or what are your thoughts going forward as far as you being a manager, either for Cody or whoever, versus being more of an in-ring wrestler?
That particular day was pretty heartbreaking for me. We had something really cool that people really wanted to see in Chris Statlander finally getting into the ring with Awesome Kong, two really strong women, you know, being able to showcase like that. And I was really excited about it. And when I got the call from the doctor saying that she could not, he would not clear her, my heart was broken. But it was broken for two reasons. It was broken for the fans, because I knew that they really wanted to see that match. But then it was broken for me, because I knew I had to be in the match. So, you know, we did everything. We gave it our best shot in that scenario. But, yeah, I've gone on record to say that I'm a part-time wrestler for sure. I'm definitely not someone who ever wants to push to be the full-time main event female wrestler. That's just not me. And I love wrestling, and I have a lot of fun with wrestling. And there are spots like, you know, that you'll see for me. Like, I mean, in the Battle Royale this year, you saw me, and hopefully in spots like that, you'll continue to see me. But, you know, I made a pretty big commitment when we decided to do this, that I would not be a major focal point in the women's division, and I'm not.
All right. Well, actually, stand by. We're gonna head to a break. Sorry about that. Back in a moment. Observer Live. Back in the show, Brian Alvarez here, Wrestling Observer Live. Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Brandi Rhodes joining us here at the Brandi Rhodes on Twitter. And we got about 90 seconds here. Let's get some plugs in for your social media and AEW.
Well, you got me for Twitter, but I'm the same at the Brandi Rhodes on Instagram as well. And, yeah, AEW every Wednesday night, live, 8 p.m. Eastern on TNT. We're looking forward to some amazing shows coming up as we lead up to Revolution, kind of on the road to Atlanta and Revolution for Steel Cage coming up in a couple of weeks. So we've got things happening, and we hope that everybody's going to be tuning in. And I just want to thank you guys so much for giving me a moment to talk about these important things that we hadn't had a chance to chat with anybody about. I'm glad that it was you guys. So thank you so much.
Well, I want to thank you so much for doing the show here today. Someone had a quick question here. Are you going to be in Cody's corner when he faces MJF after all of this?
I don't know. I really don't. That's the real answer. So,
man,
we'll see.
Oh, man. He's gonna have to watch his eyes. So what's going to happen.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, listen, Brandi, I want to thank you so much for doing the show here today at the Brandi Rhodes on all of the major social media. You can check out AEW every Wednesday night at 8 Eastern on TNT. Big show coming up this Wednesday. Check it out. So thanks, Brandi. Thanks, Mike, as always. Callers and listeners, everybody in the studio, we'll talk to you again next time. Wrestling Observer Live.